Welcome to season four of the Raise Your Game Show, a podcast that unpacks and dissects the strategies and principles of high performance in sports and business. I'm your host, Alan Stein Jr.
Let's do it.
In this season, I unpack the key stories and lessons from my book, Raise Your Game. High performance secrets from the best of the best. If you've already read or listened to my book, please enjoy the reinforcement and reminders. Remember, repetition is not punishment. If this is all new to you, I hope you find this content helpful. You can order the full audiobook at audible.com or wherever audiobooks are sold. You can also order the paperback or hard copy version for you or your entire team or organization at raiseyourgamebook.com. Before I dive in, I wanted to announce that Your Game Plan, Student Athlete Edition, is coming soon. This online course was strategically designed by me to help middle school, high school, and college athletes improve their leadership, communication, and habits, as well as become the best version of themselves on and off the court or field. Here are a few samples of the lessons taught. I've got dozens and dozens of favorite quotes, but if I had to pick one, it would be, are the habits you have today on par for the dreams you have for tomorrow? And I actually said that in kind of an impromptu talk one time at a basketball camp, and it's now hanging in the training facility of Penn State's football team, which is really a cool and neat honor. So the quote's gotten a little bit of recognition. But the most important part of that quote is, you have to have alignment between what you do every single day and what your goals and dreams are. The first thing you need to do is take a deep breath and realize that no matter what this adversity is, at some point it will pass. And I know that's easy to say and not very easy to do, but I'm hoping what it does is reframe your perspective and give you a little bit of optimism. Now, clearly, there's a wide range of adversities for student athletes. This could be something on the smaller acute level. You know, you get a D on a history test that you really studied hard for. It could be something, you know, a little bit higher stakes. You know, you sprained your ankle in practice and you may have to miss Friday's game. And it could be anything in between. But whatever the adversity is, first and foremost, you have to realize that you do have the strength to get past it, that it will eventually pass, and hopefully that optimism and a sense of poise can lead to some of the other steps. And make sure you follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Alan Stein Jr., or keep listening to the rest of this season for more info. In today's episode, we explore Chapter 7 from the coach section, which focuses on culture. The role of a leader is not to come up with great ideas. The role of a leader is to create an environment in which great ideas can happen. Simon Sinek. If vision begins in the mind, culture begins on the ground. Culture is the collective values, beliefs, behaviors, and environment of a team, group, or organization. A positive culture grows organically in an environment where everyone feels inspired, safe, and appreciated. Those who are a part of a successful culture feel that their contribution and role matter, that they are being challenged to grow and develop, that they couldn't just be replaced tomorrow without the organization missing a beat. If, as a coach, you create that type of environment, then you create the fertile ground for people to become the best versions of themselves. Celtics culture. Culture, even in the most storied organizations, doesn't just appear and it doesn't automatically regenerate itself. It requires someone at the helm who is committed to developing and maintaining that culture. I can't think of a better embodiment of this fact than Brad Stevens. In the span of 4 years, Brad Stevens went from coaching men's basketball at Butler University, a small Division I school, to two straight national championship games, to one of the most iconic roles in sports, head coach of the winningest franchise in NBA history, the Boston Celtics. Oh, and he landed the job at 36 years old. If Stevens' tale had ended there, it would still be a success story. However, Stevens didn't just get the highly coveted job. He has been universally acclaimed as a runaway success. Under Stevens, the Celtics are now regularly at the top of the Eastern Conference and a legitimate contender to make the NBA Finals. Even adversity injury, and constant change haven't stopped him. In the 2017-2018 season, the Celtics had only four returning players from the previous year. Then they lost their highly touted new player, Gordon Haywood, for the season on opening night. They went through the season with seven rookies on a roster of 12 and were almost always first in the league in total salary lost to injury. Yet they were still a contender for the best record in their conference. Then their best player, Kyrie Irving, went down before the playoffs started. And still they were one win away from that year's finals. Without taking anything away from the remaining players who worked their butts off, their collective success is a testament to the environment Stevens had developed. When Stevens arrived, he came into a storied franchise that had fallen on tough times. However, he refused to be intimidated by the way things were done, the way they had always been done. Think about the courage that required. A college coach from a relatively small school gets that rare ticket to the NBA. And probably, he's handed the keys to one of the most iconic teams in professional sports. However, when he gets there, he doesn't bow to an entrenched way of doing things. He takes it all head on and knows immediately what he has to do to first turn things around. Change the culture. Even with an organization like the Celtics, with its famed arenas, its history of championship banners, its long line of Hall of Famers, building a culture requires work. Culture is a living thing. It has to be embedded in the people, and those people have to choose to pass it on. Think about all the laminated packets that are passed out to new hires or stapled photocopies distributed at company meetings that are tossed in the recycle bin. I'm sure whoever wrote those up and put them together felt they were communicating the culture, but that's not how it works. It's not a one-way thing. A culture isn't born when someone reads it on a page. You can't just say it aloud and expect it to exist. It has to come to life through people. Stevens understands motivation, what works, and what doesn't. I attended a talk he gave where he explained that the key to confidence is not just getting better, but rather knowing you got better. A leader has to find ways to show his players they are improving through communication, feedback, and rewards. You have to care enough, be committed enough to building a culture, to give those things to your people. When I interviewed Stevens for my podcast, he told me that he looks for assistants who are intelligent, creative, hardworking, and humble. Stevens understands that each addition to the team can affect, improve, or even damage team culture and cohesion. It's silly to think that staff chemistry doesn't affect team chemistry, he said. Think about the type of people you're bringing in and the type you're letting go. Each of these choices add or subtract from the team. A hiring or firing isn't just between employee and boss. It reverberates around the entire company. A true leader is hyper-aware of how each decision affects the group or company at large. Stevens cares enough about the culture he's fostering with the Celtics to constantly be evaluating how his decisions fit into the team's larger dynamics and goals. I asked Stevens how, back when he was a college coach, he would create this buy-in from his players, many of whom were the best in their respective high schools. It was something he had to do again in the NBA, with players who were their best at their respective colleges. Each player brings great strengths to the table, he told me, and it's incumbent on us coaches to best maximize each strength. I've been around and spoken to enough people who have coached at the highest level. It's extremely difficult to keep a unified culture together with 12 guys, all with healthy egos, who are getting paid serious money just to lace up their sneakers. Stevens has a wisdom that far surpasses his age and an ability to empathize with all the various role players on the team. He recognizes things are tough for those on the bench, and he told me he works to help guys understand there can be great progress and growth without playing time, that there can be great value added. There's nothing like winning as a team, and we can all add value to that. That's ultimately what we have to try to do. A lifelong learner, Stevens told me he reaches out to business leaders and those in other industries because of the universal qualities that are shared between business and sports. If you surround yourself with the right people and you work for empowering leaders, you can always just focus on the process, he told me. With the culture Stevens has put in place in Boston, the Celtics look like they will be contenders for a long time. Even if the players change, as they are bound to do, the culture will remain in place. How the car runs. Culture may be best defined as that which exists when the boss isn't around. There's a similarity with parenting. What your kid does in front of you doesn't necessarily reflect your parenting. What he does when you're not around, that's much more accurate. When Golden State Warriors head coach Steve Kerr, suffering from a debilitating back injury, was unable to be on the bench for the 2017 playoffs, the team still brought home another NBA championship. Didn't this show that Kerr didn't matter? Was Kerr unnecessary? Actually, the opposite. Because Kerr had laid the groundwork with his players, he didn't need to physically be there. He developed a culture that was so strong, it remained intact even when he wasn't present. The Warriors are stacked with talent, but anyone who understands basketball knows that that alone isn't enough. Kerr's role is enormously valuable, more than any single star player. Sports Illustrated's Chris Ballard wrote that even if you think the Warriors are pretty much a self-driving car, someone has to design and maintain the car. Remember, they had almost all of that talent back when Mark Jackson was coach, with little to show for it. Part of Kerr's personality is outright humility, which might make his importance invisible to the casual observer. As a coach, he goes out of his way not to make it about himself. This creates the illusion that he stays in the background, but in reality, he is the ground itself. Part of the culture Kerr has established with Golden State is that the players are the focus. He takes less credit than he deserves because that ultimately doesn't matter to him. What he cares about is how his players feel about the group. A coach who takes too much credit isn't going to have much to take credit for. His players are going to resent it, and it will affect the team's performance. According to Warriors all-star forward Draymond Green, Kerr has built a culture of empowerment, which may look like players are running the show, but that doesn't mean they actually are. This is why, during the 2018 season, Kerr comfortably let players run timeouts, drawing up X's and O's in the huddle. He could trust them because they were working within a culture he had created. Once your vision is established, culture is what you create to incubate your vision and execute it. It's how you keep the car running. A culture of connection. At Duke, a place where the culture has been consistent for decades, Coach Mike Krzyzewski spends the first team meeting every year connecting players' actions to the larger organization, how what each player does reflects on Duke basketball and the university as a whole. Remember that whatever happens to you happens to all of us, he tells them, and he uses that both positively, we're a family, and negatively. Don't screw up. The culture Coach K has established ties everyone together. In an interview on Paul Rabel's Suiting Up podcast, Jay Williams told a great story about sitting down across from Coach K as a 16-year-old. Coach K referred to him as Mr. Williams, which had a profound effect on young Jay. It made him feel like an adult. Coach K didn't promise Williams a highly coveted recruit playing time, an NBA career, or stardom. But he did say, "I promise you that by the time you leave here, you will be prepared for life." That simple message flipped a switch for the young prospect. Williams wrote in his memoir that he then understood it was about becoming a man, being challenged to think about my future as a man would. What Coach K wants for his players is much fuller and deeper than just basketball. It's one of the main reasons he's been such a long-term success, as have his players. Buying in. Buy-in means that members of your organization choose to embrace, share, and maintain the culture a coach is trying to create. A culture doesn't exist because someone at the top says so. It's brought to life by being accepted and reinforced among the rest of the group. Culture requires consent. In his book, Start With Why, How Great Leaders Inspire Everyone to Take Action, Simon Sinek champions the need for businesses to build a buy-in culture. A buy-in culture defines a purpose, creates a sense of loyalty, and makes everyone happy to serve the whole. Genuine leadership means that others willingly follow you, he explains, not because they have to, but because they want to. One technique a smart leader does is to get the influencers on his side, those whom he knows will trigger a wave of acceptance across the rest of the organization. If you're looking to win over a group, figure out whom to target. Who can move the crowd? A great example of this is from one of my all-time favorite movies, Hoosiers. Outsider coach Norman Dale, Gene Hackman, comes to small-town Indiana, a place not open to newcomers, and has a rough time coaching the high school basketball squad. He knows his days are numbered, and instead of trying to recruit the reluctant prodigy Jimmy Chitwood to join the team, he makes a point of giving the kid space, leaving him be, and talking one-on-one with him in an empathetic manner. He talks to Chitwood about his love for basketball, but never once pressures him or even asks him to join the team. This is despite the fact that the whole town is telling him it's the only way for Coach Dale to save his job. The strategy pays off big time. When Jimmy agrees to come back on the team and play, he says he will only do it for Dale. After that, the team and the whole town get in line and they start rattling off wins. Chitwood was the pressure point, and Coach Dale knew exactly how to press it. Leadership isn't about forcing others in a direction. It's about moving ahead and trusting others will follow, trusting they'll want to follow. If they are working within a positive culture, they will be there, and you won't even have to keep checking if they're right behind you. Create an environment where the best ideas win, where everyone feels involved, and the whole is bigger than any individual part. Reward thoughtful failure. A Google maxim. Google culture. Google didn't become a half-trillion-dollar phenomenon and the home base of the internet by playing it safe. Its culture has always been one where the bosses encourage a healthy amount of trying and failing, throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. Google has produced some winners, Gmail, AdSense, and some losers, Google Glass, but that's the culture, swing big. It's the embodiment of the old adage, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. If you're achieving all your goals, wrote former Google Senior Vice President Laszlo Bock, you're not setting them aggressively enough. If you didn't lose the ball, you didn't learn anything. In fact, at X, the arm of Google that is tasked with experimenting and trying out its craziest projects, the executives give out bonuses and vacation time for teams that choose to end their projects. Yes, you heard me correctly. Employees get bonuses for giving up. The reason? Google knows that countless man hours and company dollars are often sunk on things that simply don't work, but no one wants to say so. X's strategy is to encourage people to admit their mistakes rather than, out of pride, plowing wasted time and money into them. This strategy is an integral part of Google's culture, which doesn't just pay lip service to healthy failure, it lives it. Besides motivating employees to go big and think different, there's a flatness to Google's structure. Senior executives at the company receive the same benefits and resources as the newly hired. The top men and women don't get their own parking spots or executive bathrooms or dining rooms. As a leader, Bock wrote, giving up status symbols is the most powerful message you can send that you care about what your teams have to say. If your company doles out privileges for senior management, think about why that is. What message does that send? Is it supposed to be a motivator? A status symbol? Why do certain titles merit their own bathroom and parking spaces and others don't? A strong culture keeps an organization on track, especially when things are tough, and gives employees a sense of, and a hand in, the bigger picture. A positive culture increases efficiency, effectiveness, and productivity, while a poor culture lowers morale, increases attrition, and undermines every aspect of team cohesion. If an outsider were to wander into your office and observe 15 minutes of your company's workday, would the organization's identity be clear? What about its standards? Its culture? Don't forget, your people are your most important tool and your primary competitive advantage. You can copy products. You can copy service. You can copy technology. But it's very hard to copy culture, and that culture is supported and spread by your people. As a coach, keep in mind that how you treat your people is an important part of that culture. If they feel valued, they will help lift up the team. If they don't, they won't bother or they'll only be out for themselves. A Gallup poll revealed that the number one cause of employee attrition, 65%, is poor management and leadership. According to Robert Levering and Milton Moskowitz, who were the originators of Fortune's annual Best 100 Places to Work survey, the key to creating a great workplace was not a prescriptive set of employee benefits, programs, and practices, but the building of high-quality relationships in the workplace. Building meaningful relationships is the most effective way to keep your employees grounded, connected, and motivated. It's the foundation for a winning culture. Here's a self-test. Here's a weekly employee check-in to improve job satisfaction and culture. I want to give full credit to my friend Dr. Brian Williams, who showed me this. I want you to consider typing up a version of it to hand out to employees. Last week, I used my strengths when. Last week, I added value to the team when. Last week, I did the following tasks I enjoyed. Last week, I felt valued and utilized when. These are my priorities for next week. This is what I need help with next week. Attention leaders, addressing these weekly check-ins is not extra work. It is your work. Negative people. Culture, especially while it's first being established, can be a fragile thing. One strong personality can poke holes in it or tear it down. Part of a company's culture is how it deals with people like this, or even if these people are allowed in the door in the first place. At his department at Stanford University, management science professor Robert I. Sutton famously instituted what his team called the no a-hole rule. It's a test he and his colleagues use when deciding whether or not they want to work with someone. They simply ask, would this hire violate the no a-hole rule? I absolutely love this. It's direct, simple, and supremely effective. Negative people are like viruses, and their attitudes spread and seep into every aspect of a workplace. They are the fellowship of the miserable, Sutton wrote, and they are the killers of the dream. They look for reasons why things won't work, rather than exploring why they could work. In his book, The No Asshole Rule, Sutton goes further. He doesn't just use anecdotal evidence of his own experience. Following his training, he took an evidence-based look at assholes' influence in the workplace. The damage that assholes do to their organizations, Sutton found, is seen in the cost of increased turnover, absenteeism, decreased commitment to work, and the distraction and impaired individual performance documented in studies of psychological abuse, bullying, and mobbing. One me-oriented person has the power to bring the entire operation crashing to the ground. These types of people are enormously powerful and influential forces, as any classroom teacher can attest. The New Zealand All Blacks, a rugby team that has had more success than just about any other team in professional sports, has a similar rule with even more colorful language. No dickheads. These are rough and tumble guys playing a high contact sport, but that doesn't mean they don't require a supportive culture in which to succeed. That doesn't mean they want to play with a-holes. Selfishness, negativity, and bad attitudes need to be kept out. If they slip in, they need to be extricated. If they remain, they become part of the culture. Leaders need to recognize that if they allow a behavior, they are endorsing that behavior. It's that simple. Remember, leadership is not what you say. Leadership is what you accept. Culture as value. Michael Bungay Stanier, author of The Coaching Habit, is an expert in business leadership and what it takes to build a winning culture. When I interviewed him, he told me, culture can be thought of as the habits of the people who work in that organization, the things we do each day without really thinking about it that makes up how we really care about and how we really do things around here. So to change your culture, change your habits. A culture is something that will eventually grow and spread. You have control in the beginning, but after that, you're at the mercy of what develops on its own. That's why the word culture reminds us of something growing in a dish in a chemistry class. We set up the environment, and then it just does what it naturally wants to do under those conditions. Around his UCLA players, John Wooden eventually stopped talking about winning at all. He wouldn't even say the word. He claimed not to have mentioned it as a goal in the last 30 years of his illustrious career. His standard of success was defined differently than most other coaches, and he wanted a culture in his locker room that didn't overvalue winning. A good leader is a good salesperson, he once said. What are you selling? What is your philosophy? What is success? Here's a self-test. What is your team's definition of success? Is the culture in your organization based on money, titles, or is it something intangible? If you recognize that your company or team's culture is unproductive or even toxic, what steps can you take today to start changing it? Open culture. Another important part of culture is a sense of openness. If no one shares what they think, the culture becomes one of fear, suspicion, and failure. Problems fester in an environment where everyone is afraid to tell the boss what's going on. If you expect a culture of trust, my friend Jay Billis wrote, you have to build and foster a culture of truth. Though cultures will vary from business to business, honesty and trust are bedrock concepts for all organizations. It's the leader's job to create an environment where everyone feels safe enough to speak up. I once heard this Wall Street story about a lower-tier employee at an investment firm. Let's call him Mark, who had misplaced $30 million. That's right, he misplaced it. He didn't lose the money. In the way of financial companies, it just couldn't be located right away. And it took a few days to find it. Mark apparently worked for a real yeller, a boss who loved to make examples out of employees in a public and embarrassing way. Since Mark was terrified, he began a series of cover-ups and evasions to buy time until the money was found. After a couple of days, the money was located and everything was fine. Then the big boss, an executive, called Mark and Mark's immediate boss into the office. Mark was caught and he had to fess up. As Mark told his story, the executive listened and recognized that the real issue was not the mistake, but the cover-up Mark felt compelled to engage in. Then the executive made a decision. He fired Mark's boss. The executive determined that the problem was not the isolated mistake Mark made, but the culture the boss had been responsible for creating. The Zappos experience. One of the most impressive examples of culture in action is Zappos. On a trip to Las Vegas, I took the Zappos Tour Experience, a perk that the company provides to anyone who wants to see their headquarters, learn their history, and witness their unique culture firsthand. Zappos CEO Tony Hsieh has described Zappos as a business that combined profits, passion, and purpose. And a visit to the company's operations center told me that these aren't just inert words on a page. These are ideas that the company lives. Though Zappos is a billion-dollar company, you wouldn't think so from wandering around their office. Rather than a staid corporate feel, the lobby was colorful and inviting, with bright mosaics on the wall and tons of Zappos swag and memorabilia. The receptionists were casually dressed with huge smiles and infectious energy. On the wall behind the front desk was a collage of several neckties. "What are those?" I asked the receptionist. "Anytime someone shows up to a job interview in a tie," she answered, "we whip out our scissors and cut it off on the spot. We are not a coat and tie kind of company." On the tour, I noticed that the place was designed for both function and fun. Desks were situated in big open spaces to create a sense of community and encourage open communication. Employees had permission to decorate their areas however they wanted. This promoted warmth and individualism within the confines of the group. There were plenty of indoor and outdoor common areas for lounging and snacking. Zappos call center is decorated like an ongoing birthday party, with a general air of celebration all around. There were whiteboards with goals listed in fat markers and thank you cards from customers adorning the cubicles. Everything was open and inviting. It honestly felt like a giant family. It's not just on display for the tour. This is what Zappos is. Every employee at Zappos must memorize its 10 core values. Things like number 3, create fun and a little weirdness. And number 7, build a positive team and family spirit. To log into their computers in the morning, employees are asked to identify the face of a random employee and are given a brief bio on that employee. There's a genuine sense that the bosses at Zappos care about the employees and go out of their way to show it. Executives check in on employees' morale through surveys about purpose, happiness, and workplace community. Every year, the company assembles the Zappos Culture Book, which contains employees' unedited thoughts on their feelings about working at Zappos. They put out an Ask Anything monthly newsletter, which is anonymous and thus actually worth reading. Think about what you could say, hear, and learn about your workplace if people genuinely felt they could speak up. Zappos' process is the same as that of any winning sports team. They establish their identity, standards, and culture, and then they recruit top talent that fits. They make sure to have the right people on their team. There is no distinction at Zappos between best and right. It's the same thing. It can take up to 90 days and 7 interviews before they know if an employee is suitable for the company. There's even a specific interview that is designed just to ensure that the employee is a culture fit. The Zappos attrition rate is less than 2%, which is unheard of. That's almost non-existent turnover. Zappos is so committed to making sure the hire is a good fit that they put forth a seemingly insane fail-safe. After 3 weeks of training, Zappos actually offers each hire $4,000 just to walk away, no questions asked. It's to see if the hire values the easy money or not. They want to know if working for the company matters more than a quick check, and this is the best way to find that out before they begin a relationship with that person. When he was 28, Zappos CEO Tony Hsieh sold his first company, Link Exchange, to Microsoft for $250 million. The reason he did it was not what you'd think. He wasn't cashing in. The company culture had become so poisonous, Hsieh admitted to an interviewer that he dreaded getting out of bed in the morning. In case you think Hsieh is full of it, he even walked away early after the sale, not getting the full amount of money he could have from the Microsoft purchase. That's how miserable he was. When he arrived at Zappos, Hsieh decided never again. From that point forward, he would put culture front and center. That's how he built the company into a powerhouse. Their culture has become the DNA of the company. It's not just printed on the walls. Every employee lives it. There is only one way to get anybody to do anything, and that is by making them want to do it. Dale Carnegie. The power of owning. Coaches, especially coaches of young men and women, instinctively understand how to get buy-in. With no money or advancement involved, the motivation has to be all intrinsic. The best coaches understand how to tap into this. At Montrose Christian High School, where I served as the basketball team's performance coach, Coach Stu Vetter always used to talk about the difference in mindset between renting and owning. When you rent something, like an apartment or a car, you view it as temporary. Because it's not yours, you don't value it as much and you don't take as good care of it. We rent things when we are young, careless, and in a state of transition. When we're mature, we buy. When you buy, you have ownership. Because of that connection, you care much more because it's yours. It's an extension of you. Those who look at the job as just a step on the ladder or a paycheck are a drag on the place's culture. They're renting their job and it shows. It is vital that you, as a leader, create and sustain a culture where everyone sees the company as an extension of themselves. That's how you get their all. They will walk through the fire for the company because it's part of who they are. That's the power of culture. Key point. Culture is the environment, both physical and psychological, that a leader creates to make his people motivated, committed, and secure. It is spread and maintained by everyone else. Remember, it is the leader's job to prepare the soil that will maximize others' potential and encourage them to be as productive as possible. Leadership doesn't simply happen. You must be intentional about generating and developing it. A leader who creates a strong culture knows that it's not about forcing people to follow you. It's about making them want to. Cultures will vary, but all leaders must create a culture of respect for everyone to thrive in. A group's culture is best reflected through how members act when the boss is not around.
Well, that's it for me. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure to join my conversations at Alan Stein Jr. on all major social platforms and go to allensteinjr.com to subscribe to my full timeout, 30-second timeout, and overtime monthly emails. I look forward to helping you raise your game.